We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
The President's request that I lead the department charged with protecting the health of all Americans and providing essential services to some of our most vulnerable citizens is a responsibility I could not refuse. I'm deeply honored by your faith in me, Mr. President.
That's Governor Kathleen Sebelius speaking yesterday at the announcement of her nomination by President Obama to become the next Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. One of the subjects we're going to take up with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse for the next 30 minutes of the program, along with the rise in teen pregnancy rates and what is being touted as designer babies. You can get your car designed, you can get your clothes designed, you can have your house designed, and now your children as well. After a conversation with Jen, we'll listen to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 3rd of March. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, does this signal the choice of Kathleen Sebelius, arguably one of the most pro-choice governors from Kansas, does this signal a shift for President Obama himself? He was talking about common ground approaches to on the abortion issue.
Well, he never meant that. Come on, Todd. He never meant common ground. If you looked at his record, he was the most pro-choice senator in the whole United States Senate. So he didn't mean common ground. What he means is let's end all this divisive talk, by which he means now that we're decisively in command of everything, it's now time to shut down the debate since we won. You know, we won numerically, and so we don't have to talk to you anymore. That's really what it amounts to. And this choice of his, of Sebelius, is an indication that he is really a radical pro-abortion person. He always has been, and this is his signal to us all, not that he's trying to find common ground, but what he thinks common ground looks like. I mean, that's what he's really telling us, is that his idea of common ground is, you know, to pick out the most a very, very pro-choice governor, a very pro-choice Catholic, which is, you know, sort of a double insult to a lot of the people who voted for him.
We heard Kathleen Sebelius in her comments there at her nomination mention protecting the most vulnerable in our society. I'm thinking to myself, she must have a very selective definition of the most vulnerable to govern the way she's governed in Kansas.
Yes, what she means is economically vulnerable. That and honestly, that's what the left always means, is economically vulnerable. For them, everything is about economics. And in a sense, you can view this appointment as being the kind of a shift that shows that the trade-off here is between national health care, which supposedly takes care of the most economically vulnerable, and the radical pro-choice agenda. You know, that's the trade-off. If you want health care, you have to put up with all abortion all the time, you know, and no restrictions on abortion of any sort. And unfortunately, a lot of religious people were taken in by this kind of rhetoric during the campaign. There is now an internet campaign among so-called pro-choice Catholics to support this on exactly this basis, that this is the real pro-life position. The real pro-life position is to make sure everybody has health care. And I'm with you, Todd. I'm thinking, what are we talking about here? You know, the child in the womb is obviously more vulnerable than any living being. No matter how much or how little money you have, the child in the womb is completely, radically dependent upon his mother, and therefore that's the most vulnerable person. Not somebody who doesn't have health insurance. The two are simply not comparable.
Talk a bit about Governor Sebelius's track record on the issue of life and abortion.
Well, you know, I cannot really fully do justice to this topic just because of time constraints, but I found an outstanding article on the subject by George Weigel, which I have posted over at my blog that you can get to from ruthinstitute.org, that goes into all of the sorry details of her record. But this is a person who opposed parental notification. This is a person who opposed waiting periods, cooling off periods. In other words, you had legislation being brought forward by the state legislators of the people of Kansas, trying to enact reasonable legislation, reasonable restrictions, kind of slow down measures that have passed constitutional muster in other states. And this governor has vetoed those kinds of things, those kind of very reasonable, common sense kind of procedures, such as parental notification and cooling off periods. And she has also been closely aligned to the very kind of unsavory late-term abortion providers in Kansas, who have been very publicly in the news and so on. Those guys campaign for her. And, you know, these are abortion facilities where they you know, that are unsanitary, that if they were pulling teeth, they would be shut down for lack of sanitation purposes, you know. But these are the people who are supporting her. And really, truly, you need to go to the blog and see everything that George Weigel has to say about it, because he went on and quoted people from the American Life League and just a number of different people who have come out and said, wow, this is really a sorry choice to head up Health and Human Services. Only if you can define the child in the womb as having absolutely no standing whatsoever, and simply bracket everything about abortion, can you think that this is a suitable person to head up Health and Human Services. I mean, the state of the clinics and the state of regulation of the clinics, that such a thing should be allowed in the United States in an era of so-called safe and legal abortion. You see the conditions in some of these abortion clinics. It's ridiculous. It's not about protecting the life and health of women. It's about protecting the future of abortion. That's what it's about. And abortion as an institution, practically, that's what this is about. It's not about health, anybody's health or human services.
Given President Obama's stated goals, both before he was elected and after he has taken office, about national health care, it seems as though this appointment's a rather significant one for him and his goals.
Well, that's right. That's right. And I think it's clear that where this is headed is towards some form of single-payer national health care. And one of the problems with those type of systems is that when the state becomes responsible for a larger and larger portion of medical care, then the state controls what is considered to be acceptable care. The state controls what is considered a necessary standard of care. So I think down the road, though it doesn't show up immediately here, down the road, one of the things that you're going to see is not only the so-called right to die, but the so-called duty to die, you know, where a person is old and using a lot of services, and after all, these are taxpayer-funded services, and you're sucking the life out of the rest of the economy and the rest of the people. You know, why don't you go off in the corner and we'll cut off we'll take you off the life support system and turn you loose. The pressures on people to discontinue care are simply much, much greater in this kind of very centralized taxpayer-funded system, as opposed to something that at least has some elements of decentralization and private choices that we have now. So the whole direction he's moving is really, I think, quite ominous from the point of view of pro-life people.
What does it signal by way of his willingness to keep a promise he made about a year ago to Planned Parenthood to sign the Freedom of Choice Act should it come to his desk? What does this appointment tell you about that?
Well, it's no surprise. Let's put it this way: this appointment and that promise are of a piece with one another. I mean, aren't they? You know, they're all saying that the Planned Parenthood abortion lobby is a very important constituency in his coalition, and that without their support, it's doubtful that he would have been elected. Or let's just say they were an important element to his success. So it's payback time. He's giving them what he said he would do. So there's no doubt in my mind, if FOCA passes, if the Freedom of Choice Act passes, he will certainly sign it. I don't think there's ever been any shadow of a doubt about that. The only question is whether it will pass and in what form it will pass. I think those are going to be the interesting questions going forward, Todd.
Believe it or not, kids today get less information in schools about birth control than their parents did. The states know what the federal government will hopefully follow suit on very soon, which is that abstinence-only programs are a waste of money.
That's Columbia University professor Leslie Cantor saying that the reason we have a rise in teen pregnancy is because public schools have been pushing abstinence and not enough sex ed and, in particular, contraceptive instruction. We've got about a minute and a half before we go to the break. We continue on the other side of the break with you, Jen. Your reaction.
Well, I don't know. You know, she's talking about kids today versus their parents. I guess I would be one of those parents, and I'm pretty sure that the kids today get a lot more information about birth control than I did when I was in school. I feel pretty confident saying that. Maybe I'm the wrong age group of parents that she's talking about, but I think that was a pretty ridiculous thing for her to say. And to make the connection that all you need to do is have more contraceptive education and everything will be fine, I think that's pretty far-fetched.
Well, when we come back from this break, there was a term recently coined by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, our guest in this half hour. On these airwaves, she called it condomism. Everything would be better if we kids just had more condoms. Is abstinence to blame for the rise in teen pregnancy? What is to blame if not abstinence education, if not the lack of condoms, if not the lack of sex ed and contraceptive education? What is to blame for the rise in teen pregnancy? Then a little bit later, we'll talk about if the babies actually make it to term. People are trying to design them according to their own preferences. Hair color, eye color, whatever you like in your baby, they say now, through fertility technology, you can have it. We'll find out what that's all about after this.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Jesus, did he address gay marriage?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Apologetics Ministry of Answers in Genesis.
You know, Christ dealt with the doctrine of marriage in the book of Matthew, but did he directly address the issue of so-called gay marriage? Think about this. I was watching a TV news program where a well-known Christian leader was being interviewed about the gay marriage controversy. The interviewer asked this leader if Jesus directly dealt with the issue. The Christian leader answered by saying, no. He then went on to say that Jesus didn't deal directly with a lot of issues, like abortion and so on. I must admit, I really got agitated. Here was a wonderful opportunity for this Christian leader to give the right answer. You know what he should have said? Well, actually, Jesus did deal directly with gay marriage. You see, Jesus is the Word, and every word of the Bible, even though it was written by different people, is in actuality Jesus speaking to us. Thus, in Romans chapter 1, where Paul calls homosexual behavior an abomination, Jesus himself is saying this. So, of course, Jesus deals directly with gay marriage. He makes it clear it's a terrible sin and abomination.
What else does the Bible say about some of the social ills of our day, like abortion, racism, and so on? Read our fascinating book, War of the World Views, and it's available to you when you present our nonprofit ministry with a donation of any amount. Request Ken Ham's War of the World Views when you call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS. 888-89-ANSWERS.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest for the next 10 minutes of the program. Then Issues Etc. comment line. We'll listen to some of your comments and respond. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Coming to you this Tuesday afternoon, the 3rd of March. So, Jen, how do you explain the first rise in teen pregnancy rates for the first time in 14 years?
Well, you know, first of all, these rises and falls are not very big statistically, so I'm not all excited about it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, yes, it's a rise, yes, it's an increase, but it's not that big of a deal compared to a lot of what we've seen, a lot of other social changes. The one thing that does concern me about this is that we're not really telling the truth about the motivation of the girls who are getting pregnant and who are having babies. I mean, if you think about it, the teen pregnancy rate has to do with babies carried to term, not just with pregnancy altogether. And so I was trying to think about this over the break, Todd, when you were asking about me about this. I'm saying to myself, I knew I wrote about this somewhere. Where did I write about it? And now I remember. I wrote in my newsletter to my newsletter subscribers about a trip that I took to Reno, Nevada, where I talked to a group of young ladies in a crisis pregnancy center house. You know, it was one of these maternity homes where pro-life people in the community get together and support a home that allows young ladies to bring their pregnancies to term. And what struck me overwhelmingly about these girls, Todd, is that the reason they're having babies has nothing to do with whether they know about how to use a condom or anything like that. They want to be loved. They want to be loved. They are seeking sexual activity at the age of 14 because their family lives are in an uproar, and they want to be loved. And the boyfriend is somebody who, you know, makes them feel like they matter and like they are important. And they have the baby because they want to be loved. They want to love that baby. They want to be loved by that baby. And in their minds, they want to be good moms. That's the most important thing to them. So if we're simply talking about, gosh, let's give them more condoms so they can have sex and not have babies, we're really, really sidestepping, I think, the major issue of human motivation that is going on in these girls' minds, which is that having sex and having babies is about loving and being loved. It's not about getting the plumbing parts right or getting the proper interception between those plumbing parts in order to prevent a pregnancy. That's not basically what we're dealing with, I think. And so I see it as a crisis of lack of love and a lack of inappropriate place for people to have an object for their love. That's what I think. And so that whole discussion that you heard from the Columbia University professor, to me, that's completely irrelevant. You know, I mean, it's like she's over in the corner making noise, you know, when the real problem is in the center of the room staring at her. Why is a 14-year-old having sex in the first place? She's having sex because it makes her feel like she matters to somebody. And when I look at these pro-life leaders and workers who are so dedicated and give so much of themselves, this is what they're trying to confront. This is what they're trying to deal with and to help these young girls to manage and understand. And quite often, I think I said this in the newsletter too, the social worker that I talked to told me that they have these girls here and they work with them for like 3 months. They're living there, you know, so you really have a chance to get to know them and stuff. The social worker says to me, you know, within 2 years, half of them will be back here again with another pregnancy. And so you know it's not about lack of information. They know perfectly well where to get condoms and how to use them. That's not fundamentally what it's all about.
I would predict that by next year we will have determined sex with 100% certainty on a baby, and we will have determined eye color with about an 80% accuracy rate. I think it's very important that we not bury our heads in the sand and pretend that these advances aren't happening. Of course, once I've got this science, am I not to provide this to my patients? I'm a physician. I want to provide everything science gives me to my patients.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Steinberg, director of the Fertility Institute based in California, talking about what the press is calling designer babies. Hey, we can do it. We should do it, seems to be his take on this. How would you respond to that, Jen?
I'm telling you, absolutely, we can do it, so we should do it. You know, we can blow up the world with atomic weapons, therefore we should blow up the world with atomic weapons. You know, I think every person should have their own private nuclear weapon in their backyard. That's what I'm thinking. Or, you know, we can have genetically altered crops, therefore we should. You know, people on the left hate genetically altered crops. Don't they hate this designer baby business? I mean, this is crazy. The claim that we can do it, therefore we should do it, therefore we should offer this to our patients, that man's a moral idiot, okay? I don't know. I don't care how many degrees he has after his name. He is a moral idiot. There are all kinds of things you can offer to patients that you have no business offering to patients. So the idea that parents should choose on traits of that kind, traits that are quite literally trivial traits in terms of your life chances and all of those other things, that is so frivolous and so morally shallow. I'm really shocked that anybody gives this man the time of day. Who gave this man a microphone? That's what I want to know.
What kind of technology are we talking about here? My daughter was telling me about this morning before I was up on the news, because we took yesterday off, and so I'm trying to catch up. And she says, "Oh, I just heard about it. Yes. Designer babies, you can choose eye color and things like that." She's thinking they're manipulating genes, and I'm thinking to myself quietly as we're driving to school, no, they're simply culling embryos to get the desired outcomes. Which is it?
You know, I'm not sure now that you bring that up. I think that the second is quite possible what they're doing, that they're culling the embryos, but I think it won't be long before they'll be able to do the designer genes to actually pick the genes too. So I honestly don't know the answer to that, Todd.
If I would have been able to do like a little paper doll set on both of my children before they were conceived or during their gestation or whatever, before their birth, I can guarantee you I would have designed different children, but I would have been far poorer for it.
Yes.
As a father, I believe.
Yes, yes. And I think what's really at stake here, Todd, is the difference between viewing children as a gift and viewing children as some kind of product. You know, do we produce our children? Are children something we're entitled to, where we're entitled to get a particular kind of outcome, and we're entitled to have the kind of baby we want, when we want, how we want? Or are children a gift? And I think there's no doubt that the Christian teaching has always taught that every human life is a gift. And if you see yourself as a gift and you see other people in your life as a gift, I think that that posture is the most life-giving, life-affirming posture you can take towards the universe. And I talked about that actually in Smart Sex. There's a whole chapter in the book where I talk about the children being a gift from God, and even troublesome people being a gift from God. You know, that and really and truly, to view yourself in relation to others as a gift, that posture is the best way to live. Whereas if you look at other people as some kind of object that's out there, and if they're inconvenient or you don't like them, then you get to do something about them, or at the very least you get to walk away from them. That's really a recipe for loneliness in the end. You know, it's a recipe for isolation, and it doesn't at all help you to engage the world as one human being to another. And so that's part of the argument that we're going to have to be making. You know, people who respect the dignity of life, people who respect the whole of the Christian tradition, that I think is the challenge. That's the argument we have to present to the public in a way that's compelling, in a way that's beautiful, and that's what we're trying to do with the Ruth Institute. That's what I've been trying to do with my writings, you know. And I think your readers would be interested. And you, Todd, I don't know if I've ever given you this part of the book, but that chapter on the law of the gift in the back of Smart Sex. Most of the time, when people want to talk about the Smart Sex book, they all just want to talk about the chapters on sex. They don't want to talk about the alternative, which has to do with love. You know what love is really about. And that's what's at the back of that book. So people can see that too at the at my website if they go to ruthinstitute.org, or my old website, jenniferrobackmorse.com. You know, you can see all about Smart Sex. And that took me a while to think that through and to write it out, but I just really think that what this doctor is talking about is totally contrary to the truly human and truly humane values that Christianity has tried to teach us all.
With only about 30 seconds, bottom line, what's wrong with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, the technical term for what we're talking about here?
Yes. Well, pre-implantation diagnosis, there you go. That makes it clear that they are looking at the embryos and throwing away the ones they don't like. You know, it's a little bit like having a litter of cats and just drowning the ones you don't want, you know. And that's supposed to make us more human. That's supposed to make us happy. I think in the end, we're haunting ourselves with all these people that we're discarding, because that's really what we're doing, is we're discarding another person. And the fact that it's a very small person, to me, doesn't really matter.
Folks, we've posted a link to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Jennifer Roback Morse is the founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex, which has a chapter at the end on the gift. I would recommend reading that last chapter first and then the rest of the stuff. Jen, thanks for being our guest.
Oh, thanks a million, Todd. Bye.
When we come back from this break, we're going to listen to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. You leave suggestions. You leave criticism. You leave questions. You leave ideas or things that occurred to you as you're listening on demand. We're happy to listen to your comments and respond on the air. We'll do that on the other side of this break. By the way, that comment line number, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days a year. It always answers and takes your comment. 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384, the Issues Etc. comment line. We'll hear some of your comments from the comment line right after this.
We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter, and we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Here are a few of the features of the new Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Study notes, application notes, and prayers from a uniquely Lutheran perspective. 120 maps, charts, and diagrams. You'll find law and gospel application notes, center column references, and quotes from the Church Fathers. Check out the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Back by popular demand, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Obama contradictions on abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
While calling for reducing the number of abortions in America, President Barack Obama also honors the court decision that ushered in an era of abortion in this country. With no reference to the 50 million lives that have been lost to abortion, he issued a call early in his administration to expand access to birth control, even though studies show this does nothing to reduce the number of abortions. The president also spoke of common ground in the abortion debate, but for him, that appears so far to slant in favor of putting money in the pockets of the abortion industry.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.